and welcome to the final Yes to Life show of 2025 on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, your host for the show and also founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, helping people with cancer to help themselves through the proven benefits of introducing lifestyle and complementary medicine approaches into their recovery programs. My guest for this last show of the year is someone who's been helping people do just that, an experienced medical doctor who's been providing a broad raft of lifestyle medicine therapies from her clinic in Sussex. Dr. Ariane Tavakoli is one of the leading UK integrative doctors working in cancer care and has been consistently pushing the boundaries of what's possible and what's available in the UK. Hi Ariane, fantastic to have you back on the show.
Hi, Robin. Thank you so much. It's been a long time.
Tell me about it. I had a look. It's been 5 years since the last time you were on here. It was sort of either COVID or even pre-COVID, I think.
Yeah.
It was great to have you as one of our speakers this year at the What's Really Working conference in the autumn.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was great. And I did make a note then that I must get you back on the show to tell us about what's been going on at the Quantum Clinic. So.
Yeah.
Before we go on to talk about that, though, as it's been so long, do you want to introduce yourself to listeners and say how you came to be running a clinic in lovely Sussex, supporting people with cancer in all sorts of creative ways, and broadly what you offer?
Yes, of course. So I started my medical career in a very conventional way. I studied at Barts in London, qualified in 91. Decided to specialize in respiratory medicine. So I then practiced as a specialist in respiratory medicine for 16 years as a consultant, over 25 years, I think, in total in the IHS. All that time, though, I was always interested in other forms of delivering health.
Right.
I always felt there was something missing. That, you know, we were focusing in these very short appointments on drugs and what can we do pharmacologically to turn the situation around. But we were never asking, well, how do you feel? Is there any stress? What are you eating? Are you exercising? You know, I always felt these are important lifestyle factors that we're completely missing. So medicine was very good for dealing with acute emergencies. And in fact, there was a time when I almost went into emergency medicine. It very much attracted me because I felt I was actually doing something positive.
I agree. Amazing things happened in there, didn't they?
Yeah, so I almost went down that line. But in terms of chronic illness, it's really just a matter of managing things. And in respiratory medicine, I would see, you know, people with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or, you know, smoker's lung, bronchiectasis, you know, all kinds of different conditions just coming back again and again and again with their exacerbations and their infections. And it was just steroids and antibiotics and occasionally physiotherapy. It just, you know, we weren't making a dent really. Anyway, fast forward, I was very deeply affected by my husband developing, being diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. It came upon us very suddenly, although in retrospect, I can see all the red flags now that we didn't recognize at the time. Anyway, so that was a very aggressive, very quick illness. It was a very steep learning curve for me at that time. So I was the person previously that was investigating, diagnosing, and discussing lung cancer patients in our multidisciplinary meetings. Now I was actually dealing with it because we were not getting adequate treatments. So that was a very sudden and sharp learning curve for me. Unfortunately, that wasn't successful. That was nearly 10 years ago now. But that is what then started me on this whole path of integrative medicine and really shifting my focus on things that really do work, that do make a difference, and that are not being addressed. They're not being addressed in medical appointments, in oncology appointments. Nobody will say, what are you eating? Are you eating a healthy diet? You know, how are you handling your stress? What other things can you be doing to maximize the benefits of your treatment, maximize the efficacy of your treatment, minimize the side effects? One thing that comes to mind is when my husband had targeted therapy, he developed the most awful mouth ulcers. It was depressing. It was dismal. And that could have been prevented, you know, rather than waiting for this side effect to happen. You know, these are things that should be discussed. This can happen. This can happen. These are the things you can do about it. So, you know.
Yeah, that sort of wait until something goes wrong approach is just dismal, isn't it? Because, I mean, those side effects, they're not small things. They're the things that make people stop treatment. You know, they're so bad, living with constant terrible mouth ulcers as one example of many possible horrible side effects. They're just, you know, they're just too much for people. And, yeah, to simply sit there and wait for them to go wrong is unforgivable, really. We had exactly the same point made in a recent podcast interview where I'm talking about lymphedema. Rather than proactively taking steps to make sure that people don't get it, or if they do get it, it's much less debilitating, just wait until they've got a huge swollen arm and then respond rather badly because it's too late.
I agree completely. And it's not just in oncology. I think, unfortunately, doctors as a whole in all specialties, we're not very good at addressing simple, basic lifestyle measures that make a tremendous difference to just daily life to people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so you decided to set up shop on your own at the Quantum Clinic. What are the things that you're actually offering to people right now?
So we start with, you know, the initial appointment is a very detailed one. We go through all the basic things like healthy nutrition and healthy lifestyle. And if they're on treatments, we talk about chemotherapy tips and radiotherapy tips and surgical preparation and, you know, all these kind of support measures alongside treatment. And then there's some integrative therapies I offer. So there's modulated electrohypothermia or oncothermia that we talked about in the conference. There's high-dose intravenous vitamin C. There's mistletoe that I deliver as subcutaneous injections. And there's a whole raft of things that I've recently introduced and I'm looking forward to talking to you about today.
All right. Great. Very good. So, you know, right from the start, you've tried to offer a kind of holistic package, it seems, of stuff that are quite a rounded, full support to people so they could come to you and get a good program. And but you've also, yeah, your first person to offer modulated electrohypothermia in Britain. Fantastic first. We haven't got so many integrative medicine resources in this country. You know, people have had to go to Germany or wherever to get these kind of things in the past.
Yeah.
So amazing step to take. It's been a great plus for us all. But anyway, you're just mentioning that you have these other therapies that you've been focusing on recently, which are also quite novel in that way. And you've set up this thing which you called the Phoenix Protocol, I see. Now, I imagine that name is supposed to in some way encapsulate the aims of the protocol. Do you want to just explain why it's called that?
It is indeed. So what I noticed as I've been seeing so many people is that, obviously some people can do everything and still succumb. Unfortunately. And then I've been kind of seeing a recurring pattern. I've been asking, well, why is it? You know, why is it that someone can do so many things right and it's still, you know, so difficult to overcome this issue of cancer? It's a very general statement, I recognize, because obviously we see people in different stages and different severities. But one thing that keeps coming up again and again is this issue of chronic inflammation. And I know that you've discussed this on the show several times before. And what I'm talking about is not only the kind of obvious overt inflammation that one sees with, I don't know, let's say endometriosis or inflammatory bowel disease or inflammatory skin issues or anything that's obvious, but I'm talking more about that really subtle background, low-level inflammation that's just grumbling away. And you may or may not even know that it exists. And it can present with subtle features. It might be just mood changes, like depression, anxiety, things that we wouldn't normally associate with inflammation, but they certainly are, irritable bowel syndrome, or there may be no symptoms at all. And so it's very often not even identified. And the tools that we have to identify chronic inflammation are not always very helpful. So I've looked at some other ways to try and identify them and to address them. The reason it's called Phoenix Protocol, to come back to your question.
Yes.
It's all about, recovering, rising from the flames, from the inflammation, and really rejuvenation and renewal. So it's a treatment. The whole protocol is a treatment for chronic inflammation.
Mm, great. All right. Well, yeah. So inflammation, it's out there. One of the Hanahan and Weinberg hallmarks of cancer. And as such, I think we can say it's pretty much recognized by everyone. That means conventional, integrative, functional. Whoever you are, you'll see it as being a key element of cancer and indeed pretty much any old chronic disease as well.
Yep.
It's kind of rare that an aspect of cancer has little or no debate about it. But
yes.
Anyway, inflammation, it affects symptoms, long-term outcomes, and the risk of recurrence. So really important. So it makes complete sense that you'd be particularly concerned about it in relation to cancer.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, was there something in particular that made you stop and decide to focus on it in this way? Because you must have, you've been aware of it right from the start, but you've actually honed in here and built a protocol for this one thing specifically. So I just wondered
yes.
when you had a kind of aha moment, you said, right, I'm going to do something about this.
I think it just comes down to the fact that I wanted to do more. I wanted to offer more. And I knew that I had all these tools that I wasn't using to the maximum potential. So I researched to see how I can bring them in to benefit, to benefit people in their treatment, even before, during and after treatment. Because as you quite rightly say, chronic inflammation just increases the risk of everything,
right,
of recurrence, of metastasis, of symptoms, all those kinds of things.
Okay. So before we take your Phoenix Protocol to bits and examine the working parts, perhaps you want to give some kind of overview of the elements and say why you chose to include each of them?
Yeah. So first of all, I think monitoring is important because that's the only way we're going to know that what we're doing is having an impact. And the blood tests that we have available for inflammation are very useful in some ways, not so helpful in others. So for example, C-reactive protein or CRP, the standard CRP, is very helpful for an acute infection, for example, not really very helpful with low level, the subtle inflammation we're talking about. High sensitivity CRP is more sensitive.
Okay.
And it's often elevated in advanced aggressive cancers, not always elevated in early cancer. So you may have a totally normal high sensitivity CRP in early stages. Same with erythrocyte sedimentation rate, or ESR, which is a measure of how sticky the red blood cells are. Again, it's often elevated in advanced late-stage cancer, but often normal in early stages. And then we have basic measures like the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio, which is often used as a measure of inflammation. Again, that can be helpful, but it may not be. So I looked at more advanced testing, so cytokine testing. And this is something that is not widely clinically available. It's more of a research tool.
Right.
There are very few places in the UK that offer it. And cytokines, you may know, are tiny proteins in the immune system that act like messengers in the immune system. And they're very much upstream. So they decide, they're the decision makers, if you like. And the CRP raises as a response to the action of the cytokine. So they decide whether or not the CRP will even rise. CRP is more downstream molecules. The cytokine is upstream. So with cytokines, there's different types. So there are types that instruct the immune system to create inflammation because it's necessary if there's
right.
some infection going on. So they are pro-inflammatory cytokines. And there are types that instruct the immune system to suppress inflammation when it's all getting too much. So there are anti-inflammatory cytokines. And we can measure those. And they are more often disordered or inappropriately activated or whatever in earlier stages of cancer. So they're more likely to give this indication of this subtle low-level background inflammation where the others are not so sensitive for that. So that's the monitoring. I do that just before starting, just after finishing. So that's 4 weeks of treatments and then 4 weeks later after finishing treatments, because some of the treatments actually you see the benefits several weeks after stopping.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And then the actual treatments I've selected are hyperbaric oxygen therapy, amazing, bioptron hyperlight therapy, laser acupuncture, also known as low-level laser therapy or photobiomodulation, and magnetic frequencies, which has an amazing story behind it.
Okay, great. Well, I heard three out of four of those. One I've never heard of before, which is the second one. I can't even remember what you said. Please give
me... Bioptron hyperlight therapy.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. So we're going to have to find out more about that.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Love and laugh. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I mean, I think all of these are likely to be unfamiliar to some of our listeners. Maybe hyperbaric oxygen is the best known of those. But they're all quite unusual approaches, aren't they? And it's interesting, they all capitalize on different areas of physics in some way, don't they, these? And very interesting. And I think they're all worth talking about independently, if you're happy to, just so as people understand what they are. Let's start off with hyperbaric oxygen and say this is probably these days is fairly familiar, but some listeners may not even know much about that. So give us an idea about hyperbaric oxygen, then we'll move on to the less pronounceable ones.
Yes, no problem. So just to go back to why I looked at these, all of these four therapies independently have been shown in clinical trials to reduce pro-inflammatory cytokines. And I'm putting all four together. So I think this is a very kind of potent mixture, synergizing them.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I agree. With hyperbaric oxygen therapy, it's been around since the 17th century. It's been around a long time. It's been used and studied in many different kinds of conditions, from wound healing to depression to brain trauma to you name it, so many different medical conditions. It's only kind of formally approved for a limited number of conditions as a treatment. So things like decompression illness and carbon monoxide poisoning, for example, things that can be quickly fatal, in other words. So that's the approved way of using hyperbaric oxygen therapy in a hospital setting. But then for the other ways, we're looking more at the physiological benefits. So improving blood flow, improving circulation, improving oxygenation to cells, which then results in anti-inflammatory effects. So what happens when we provide more oxygen to cells is that oxygen is used to form energy. As a side effect of that, reactive oxygen species are formed. So actually an oxidative effect is what's happening initially with hyperbaric oxygen through the production of these reactive oxygen species. But as a response to that, the body's innate endogenous production of antioxidants increases dramatically and quickly, you know, within an hour of a session of hyperbaric oxygen. So that the net effect is actually an anti-inflammatory effect. And just to give a kind of an idea of how much oxygen is around in our system, we have over 30 trillion red blood cells on average in the human body. Every red blood cell has about 250 million hemoglobin molecules. Every hemoglobin molecule has four sites for oxygen to attach to it. So every red blood cell can, in theory, carry, and often does carry, about a billion oxygen molecules.
Right.
And we have 30 trillion red blood cells. So there's a lot of oxygen around.
There's some big numbers going around there. Yes, you put those all together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what you're just saying is that you can have a big effect very quickly with oxygen.
You can indeed, but the thing to bear in mind is that almost all that oxygen is in the blood vessels. It's in the red blood cells, and therefore you need a good blood supply to actually get to a target tissue to deliver that oxygen. Now, where there is inflammation, which is often the case around tumors, where there's chronic inflammation in any kind of chronic inflammatory condition, the blood supply is restricted, and so the delivery of oxygen is restricted. So the beauty of hyperbaric oxygen therapy is that what we're doing is we're pushing the oxygen out of the red blood cells into the plasma, into the liquid portion of the blood. You might think all blood is liquid because it's a liquid, but actually there's, you know, there's the cellular components, the red blood cells, etc., and there's a purely liquid part, which is the plasma. And only a Usually, normally, only a very small part of oxygen is in the plasma, only about 2%. Well, with hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we're pushing it into the plasma. So it is then available to bathe all the tissues, all the cells, and get in there and provide this anti-inflammatory effect. And you don't need high pressures to do that. You know, a lot of people think, oh, you need to go to 2 ATA, ATA being atmospheres absolute, which is a measure of hyperbaric pressure. It's equivalent to 33 feet of seawater. You really don't need high pressures, even pressures of 1.3 ATA, 1.5 ATA, even pressures of 1.04 ATA, tiny increases
in pressure.
Yes, really, have been shown in laboratory studies and preclinical studies to deliver that oxygenation and to have some physiological impact. I'm not saying that's the best, but I'm saying
no. It
has an impact.
It's interesting, yeah.
Just raising the pressure even slightly has a massive impact. So we talked about, I think you mentioned about oxygenation having a quick, we talked about it having a quick impact. So if you have like one or two single sessions of, let's say, half an hour, it tends to energize the body. One tends to come out feeling full of energy. But if you continue over a period of time, repeated sessions, 20, 30, 40 sessions, at higher pressures, higher oxygen levels, what hyperbaric oxygen tends to do is it pushes the body into a parasympathetic state. So into a more relaxed state, the vagus nerve is activated. Recovery processes are activated, anti-inflammatory processes are activated. The person starts to feel fatigued. So fatigue is a common side effect of ongoing, you know, hyperbaric oxygen. And I would say it's a good side effect to have. It's not an unpleasant fatigue. It's kind of a very relaxed kind of fatigue.
Chilled
fatigue. That's right.
Yeah.
I would say make the most of it because now's not the time to be exercising and to be traveling. It's actually resting is key when you have this kind of prolonged course of hyperbaric oxygen therapy. And when it comes to cancer, and of course it's beneficial for so many things, but when it comes to cancer, we know that hypoxia or a low oxygen level is common around tumors. And we know that that makes the tumors much more resistant to treatments. So hypoxia is a known factor to increase resistance to radiotherapy, resistance to chemotherapy, even immunotherapy. Hypoxia is also a really strong driver for angiogenesis, so blood vessel formation. So one of the main things that hyperbaric oxygen therapy does is it counteracts this hypoxia around tumors because it's getting the oxygen there. It's not enough to just be deep breathing is wonderful for its many relaxing effects, but it's not enough to just deep breathe. It's not enough to be breathing even through an oxygen concentrator. You need that pressure. It's the pressure that's going to push the oxygen out of the blood vessels and into the plasma. Mm. And that's what's going to push the oxygen around the tumor, to the tumor microenvironment. And so when we do that, we're increasing the sensitivity of the tumor. We know from clinical studies that hyperbaric oxygen therapy reduces the resistance, you know, to treatments like radiotherapy and chemotherapy. There's even studies showing that it can increase the cytotoxic impact of some chemotherapy agents. Like there's been a lot of research on brain tumors. So, for example, temozolomide that's often used for brain tumors, and 5-FU is another chemotherapy agent that's commonly used. These have been shown that the cytotoxic action of these chemotherapy agents has been shown to increase with the addition of hyperbaric oxygen.
So you're essentially, you're taking the tumor's comfortable space that it likes with all the ingredients that it feels very comfortable to expand in, and you're changing that environment to something which is rather uncomfortable for it and makes it more vulnerable, basically. And
makes it,
yeah.
That's right. That's right. So it's not a treatment, of course. It's not a treatment for cancer. But what we're doing is simply by delivering oxygen and blood supply to where it needs to be, we're making life difficult for the cancer cells, in summary. Same with immunotherapy. There's we don't have so many studies yet, but there are some early studies showing that a lot of the changes, the immune-related changes in cancer cells are actually hypoxic-driven. And that, to a certain extent, that can be counteracted with hyperbaric oxygen. There's evidence to show that there's an increased influx of cytotoxic T cells into the tumor environment with hyperbaric oxygen as well. Hmm. So that's interesting.
Interesting stuff. Okay, onward. We've got three more to cover.
Yeah.
So yeah, on to the one that I've never heard of.
Okay. So Bioptron Hyperlight therapy. How I came across this was that I've always been really fascinated by really anything to do with wavelengths, frequencies, whether it's sound, whether it's magnets, whether it's light. I've always been fascinated by that. And I have to say, I think that's the future of medicine. I think that's where we're headed.
You're not the only one saying that. Yeah, interesting. I mean, this is all this stuff has come from being utter woo-woo. Just a very few years ago, now there's an immense amount of science arriving to show that, no, this stuff actually has an effect and we can measure it.
Absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano. Flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I mean, everything we're doing now, of course, massive impact, all that, even the off-label drugs and everything. But I think, honestly, in my heart of hearts, I think they're all stepping stones towards a greater purpose. And I think moving towards this kind of frequency-assisted treatments. Anyway, to come back to this light therapy, I was researching. Initially, I was going to look at near-infrared light or some sort of infrared light in addition to the hyperbaric oxygen. They're often used together synergistically. And I was looking at studies trying to find, okay, what are the wavelengths that are used and what is the impact on the cytokines? Because that's what I wanted to know. What's the impact on inflammation? I wanted to know if it's been measured and what is it that's changing. And I was struggling, to be honest. I came across some clinical studies, but it wasn't easy. And then I came across this study that was using a particular source of light. It had a massive span of wavelengths from, I have to look it up here, 480 to 3,400 nanometers. So it's a large kind of
spectrum.
Spectrum, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
It covers the full visible spectrum, except ultraviolet. It covers the whole near-infrared spectrum, and it covers the whole far-infrared spectrum. So it's everything apart from ultraviolet ray. And what they did was that they shone this light onto the sacral area, so in the sacrum. It's only about 20 centimeters in diameter, so it's a relatively small area, 15 centimeters maybe, for 5 minutes a day for 5 days. And they measured the cytokines. And there was quite a significant response, with the pro-inflammatory cytokines coming down, anti-inflammatory cytokines going up. So I thought, what on earth? How is that happening with just shining this on a small area of the body? And we're getting this amazing response. And I looked into it further, lots of clinical research, randomized controlled trials. I'd never come across this before, but when I started looking into it, it has, you know, good clinical research backing it.
Why? Can I just ask, any particular reason why they chose that part of the body to shine it on, if you're going to...
That's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know. But because it worked in that study, that's what I've been doing. Because, you know, I change it.
What worked? Yeah.
It worked.
Very good.
I'm sure it would be the same wherever you shone it. But, you know, that's what they used. Now, the particular special thing about this Bioptron Hyperlight is that it utilizes a molecule which you can see behind me, but the listeners won't be able to see. It's called the fullerene molecule. Now, this fullerene molecule was actually only discovered in 1985, fairly recently, and the discoverers won a Nobel Prize for it. And it's purely carbon-based. It's all carbon, and it's in this hexagonal hollow structure. So it's a bit like a football, but it's soccer ball, but it's hollow. It's incredibly strong, and it's being used. It's applied in all kinds of areas of technology. It's used in medicine as a carrier for nanomedicines. It's used in electronics. It's used in cosmetics. So many different areas. It's got applications. In this light therapy, how it interacts with the light is it makes the photons form into a particular kind of pattern. So it's a non-coherent polarized light. It's called hyperpolarized. Its depth into the tissue penetration is much greater. So it can penetrate 5 centimeters at least into tissue.
Wow. Which is quite, that's a lot.
Quite a long, lot. Yeah, quite a big penetration. And the biological effects are also more pronounced as well with this, what's called this hyperpolarized light. But the question arises, for me at least, how is it that shining a light on such a small area of the body results in a systemic change, cytokines? And, you know, I guess it's all theory, but what the researchers theorized is that the blood vessels under the skin, so the relatively few red blood cells that are exposed, that are absorbing these wavelengths of light, somehow it's creating some change in them, whether it's affecting the expression of their cytokine receptors or directly affecting cytokine levels, we don't know. But somehow they are then going into the main pool of the blood bloodstream and transferring that information to the other red blood cells. This is called photomodification.
Right.
Somehow, a small, relatively small number of red blood cells are then transferring that information to the other red blood cells. And this is why we're seeing this systemic change. Now, it's being applied. There's randomized controlled trials in inflammatory conditions of the skin, of the bowel, in wound care, reducing pain, affecting mood, all kinds of things.
How interesting. This sounds like something we're going to hear a lot more about. But yep. that mechanism you said about sort of not needing to deal with the whole system, but actually just bring some new information into the system and the system itself says, ah, yes, and picks it up and transmits it throughout. That's not uncommon in all sorts of different fields, is it? We're beginning to find out that less is more in many instances because of that mechanism. Yeah. Fascinating. Look, we're going to run out of time before you've even got to the end. That was really great. Thanks very much for that. Tell us a little bit about photo biomodulation and pulse electromagnetic field therapy.
Okay, so quickly, photo biomodulation or laser acupuncture. Again, lots of studies using both normal needle acupuncture and also laser acupuncture on particular acupuncture points of the body. They've been shown to improve white blood cell count and also reduce pro-inflammatory cytokines. The benefit of laser acupuncture is that it literally takes a few seconds because it's very powerful, right, rather than leaving needles in for 30 minutes or longer. And it's painless because you don't need needles. So that's what I do. I use particular acupuncture points. I'm trained in acupuncture, traditional Chinese acupuncture. I'm trained in class 3B laser. As I said to you, I'm interested in lots of things. And throughout,
you are.
I've picked up lots of tools and done lots of training in different areas. So I'm bringing all that together. So yes, lots of studies showing reduced pro-inflammatory cytokines using particular points, which I'm doing.
Mm.
I'll move on to the magnetic frequencies because that's fascinating. And back in the 1900s, long time ago, doctors, osteopaths in America, here in the UK and in Germany were discovering that electrical frequencies can have biological effects on the body. And they were researching this. So this was an area of growing interest in medicine. There was research going on. There was research being published. There was a journal called the Electromedical Digest where research was published. And there was a growing number of doctors. Thousands of doctors were using this. And it was all based on the idea of resonance. So a lot of your listeners will be familiar with this. Tissues and cells and organs in the body, they resonate at a particular frequency. And if we can apply the correct frequency to that tissue, then what that creates is very large amplitudes of oscillation, large oscillation waves. And that has a biological effect. And they were using this as a way of treating many different things up until 1934, which is when the American Medical Association stepped in and said, this is unscientific, despite the fact that valid research was being done and published, and it was an area of growing interest. And so that made life more difficult. And then a few years later in the 1950s, I think it was 1952, the AMA actually brought legislation in and made it illegal to use any kind of electrical or electromagnetic device as a treatment. And so that meant that doctors could not use it unless they wanted to lose their license. The devices were put into back rooms or destroyed. The research was destroyed. So I believe there are still maybe a few copies of the Electromedical Digest somewhere in the world, but almost all of it, because of course, back in those days, there was no internet. It was all physical copies. So all destroyed. So what happened then was in 1946, and I think he was an osteopath, Harry Van Gelder, bought a practice that happened to have a device with the listed frequencies.
Okay.
And he started using this with his patients with incredible results. And this was picked up by someone called George Douglas, who then passed it on to a Dr. Carolyn McMackin in 1995, who's been using it for muscle pain, nerve pain, mainly musculoskeletal things to begin with, published papers in peer-reviewed journals showing that certain frequencies can cause dramatic changes to pro-inflammatory cytokines, and extended that to treating different medical conditions. And now this Dr. McMakin, who's a chiropractor in America, amazing woman, who I've also trained with, has been training thousands of doctors, osteopaths, chiropractors, physiotherapists, a lot of manual therapists, but also other healthcare practitioners around the world. And it's really pioneering further work into this area. So we know the frequencies for certain pathologies. How they figured these out, we will never know, because the research was destroyed.
Right.
But we know the frequencies for certain pathologies, like, let's say, inflammation or allergy or scar tissue, or you name it, whatever pathology. And we know the frequencies for tissues. So let's say skin or nerve tissue or the liver or whatever. And if we combine the correct frequency with the correct tissue, then that creates biomedical changes, and we're seeing tremendous impacts with that.
Right. Amazing. All that sort of bad press about anything to do with magnets has lasted well into the time I've been doing Yes to Life. I mean, nobody who wanted to sort of not get shot down mentioned using magnetism in any way a few years ago in relation to health, despite the fact we're electromagnetic beings. You know, everybody knows that. It's just bonkers stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what the law is often, bonkers. Yeah, fascinating. Look, we've just got a few minutes left. So why don't you tell us about some of the results that you're able to achieve trying to help people with inflammation?
Yes. I think the first thing I want to say is that you're quite right about the issues around all these thinking about this kind of way of addressing disease. We have to be careful. I think it's very important to look at the research and to look at evidence-based or evidence-informed approaches, and because there's lots of things on the market there that are not necessarily helpful.
Sure.
Yeah. And I didn't mention that the electrical frequencies I was discussing can be converted to magnetic frequencies. So it's exactly the same frequency, but it's a slightly more practical and user-friendly way of using it through that way. And I launched the Phoenix Protocol last month. So,
okay. Early days.
Early days, and I'm collecting data. So I only have one blood result that's come through. I'm waiting for many more blood results to come through. But interestingly, it's a lady who, up until now, it's just the full blood count that's come through. I'm still waiting for cytokines and everything else. Up until now, her neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio has always been above 3, so a bit less than ideal. And she's been struggling to get that down along with other things. She's post-treatment. For the first time in ages, the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio is now below 3.
Okay. Looks good. But that
sounds good. We need more data. Yeah.
Yeah. More data required. But it'd be interesting to check in 6 months, 9 months down the line and see what kind of figures are coming through, particularly on the more sophisticated tests where you can really see what's happening.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, great. I haven't heard of anybody else paying so much attention to one particular facet of this of inflammation in cancer. As I say, it's totally broad recognition that it's key to the progress of cancer and something we need to address somehow. And everybody is trying to address it somehow, but I haven't heard of anything as comprehensive as you put together to do that job. So I think there's a fair chance you're going to move the needle on this one and actually show that more is possible and it's less haphazard than people may have thought, you know, less luck involved in whether you achieve the results and you can get something more predictable. So that would be so great, and everybody will benefit from the knowledge of what you're experimenting with, I think. So very exciting. What an interesting chat, Arian. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We definitely must make a point of not leaving it so long till the next time. We've got something to talk about, which is how you're getting on. So very good. So do you want to just tell somebody how they can find out more about you, your website?
Yes, of course. If you just Google Quantum Clinic, it'll come up, but it's quantumclinic.co.uk. very happy to talk. And of course, I have to say all the physical treatments I've just mentioned are, of course, in addition to all the things that everyone knows about the healthy nutrition and the lifestyle and all of that. It's not in isolation, everything together in synergy.
Absolutely, yeah. Right, which of course you offer so much of. So everything from the mind body to the nutrition and supplementation, etc. So fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. Lovely to talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Robin. Bye.
Fascinating discussion. It can't be overstated how fundamental inflammation is to the process of cancer. And so efforts to develop ways to control and reverse it are of central interest to anyone looking to control and reverse cancer. So the consistency with which Dr. Tavakoli finds she is able to address background inflammation is something to keep a close eye on, and particularly how success in this arena relates to success in controlling the progress of cancer itself. I sincerely hope you're finding you're able to share at least some part of the Christmas break with friends, with family, and I look forward to bringing you more interviews with leaders in integrative oncology in 2026. So I hope you'll be joining me here on the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.